It is an honor to talk to T. Boone Pickens. Now, there's a name that pretty much any time people would say, oh, I know the name. He's been involved in so many things, so many good things, so many business successes over the years. But especially now, I mean, he's got this media campaign going on, about $58 or $60 million worth of passion. And he joins us from, what is it, Air Boone? Is that where you are right now, Mr. Pickens?
We're just on our way to San Diego. We're just about Albuquerque.
Well, and I got to tell you, as you're flying here, and I'm sure sensibly appointed aircraft, and careful about the Al Gore carbon footprint here, but when you're passionate about something like you are, the Pickens plan, and people have been seeing the commercials you've been running and really getting out in front of the public on this, I've got to go back to where one of the two times I've been honored to be with you at one of your homes here in San Diego, because I guess people don't necessarily know that you live here a lot of the time. But I remember back in April, we were doing the event for Brian Bilbray, and I was emceeing, and you started talking to the crowd there out on your lawn about fossil fuels and what this country needs to do. And I couldn't help but think about your passion, because at that point, you weren't announcing any big plan in the media campaign. But what struck me was the way that you're talking about 100, 150 years down the line here. I mean, the forward thinking after all of us are gone, there's a point where you got to say, we got to do something differently, and that's what's really motivating you, isn't it?
Well, you've got to do something now, Mark. Of course, it's going to affect us 150 years down the way, but we've got to do something about the we're spending $700 billion a year for foreign oil, and that money's going out to, you know, a few friends and a hell of a bunch of our enemies.
Yeah.
So, you know, just looking at that $700 billion, you know what you're doing. Compared to the Iraqi war, and $700 billion is 4.5 times greater, and this happens annually. This is not a one-time charge, but it's 4.5 times greater than the cost of the Iraqi war. And then, you know, you think about it, well, hell, we're paying for both sides of the war is
yeah.
what we're doing.
Well, and
we border on being fools for all we're doing.
Well, and you go back to where the numbers have been, and any of us have been around for a while. You've certainly been around longer than I, but you go back to the Jimmy Carter administration and so forth. I remember 30, 40 years ago, and you remember beyond that. I mean, I'm 52 years old, almost 53, and I remember everybody saying politically, we've got to do something, we've got to wean ourselves, we've got to look at alternative fuels, and then decades fly by. That's the frustration, isn't it?
Well, you know why. I mean, if you want to find the problem in it all is we had cheap oil.
Yeah.
And it didn't cause us to do anything. We were lazy. And we just kept drifting. To me, it's like going down the Niagara River, and I'm in a boat, and everything's calm, nice, and it's a beautiful day, and then years go by, and I realize I don't have an oar, I don't have a motor, I don't have a preserver, and I'm starting to hear water going over the falls. And that's about where we are right now. I mean, I can hear the water, and I don't like the feeling. And we've got to do something now, but it was cheap oil, and then we didn't have the leadership. We, you know, everybody's ever run for president, Democrat or Republican, either one. They say, elect me and we'll be energy independent. And, hell, they didn't know what they were talking about, and nobody ever held them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we went from 1970, we were importing 24% of the oil. 1991, it was 42%. And I made speeches at that time, 20 years ago, where I said, you cannot go more than 50%. We are absolute fools to do it. Nobody paid any attention to me. And I said, you're going to be, by the end of the century, you're going to be importing 60%. Oh, there were half a dozen articles that came out, you know, and said,
yeah.
Pickens is crazy, doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, now we're almost 70%, and if we keep drifting down that Niagara River, I promise you, in 10 years, we'll be 80%.
Yeah, talking to Boone Pickens here on San Diego 1700, so many things strike me as I look at just what's happening here. You've got some pretty darn good predictive powers. You were talking about $150 per barrel oil, and some people said you were crazy with that. That was pretty prophetic. Now, you said this week, when you're testifying on Capitol Hill in front of the surprisingly, mostly adoring fans there, even from the other side politically, you're talking about $300 a barrel oil, which got everybody's attention.
Well, they asked me in 10 years. They said, I said, you're going to be up to 80% of your that you bring in is going to, in 10 years. And they said, well, what price are we going to pay for it? And I said, if you don't do anything and just keep drifting, I said, in 10 years, I said, I can guarantee you're going to have $300 oil is the way it's going to work.
Now, when you make these pronouncements, obviously things have happened in the last couple of weeks. Gas prices have been going down, I think, for the last 16, 17 days or so, which can give people a false sense of security. There's also talk that maybe George W. Bush set some of that in motion. There have been more than one commentator coming out and saying he was talking about drilling, and then the price started going down. Do you buy that that's what it is, or that you talking about this is helping drive that down? And does that help or hinder what you're trying to do?
Oh, you know, today they were saying that what I was doing was bringing the price down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that. No, the market is the market. And supply is 85 million barrels a day in the world, and you have about 86 million. And so supply and demand are very close to balance, but it pushes the price up, of course, when you're short demand, your supply is short demand, well, you're going to push the price up till the price kills the demand is the way it works.
Yeah.
And it pushed up, and we saw $4 gasoline. People got tired of that right quick, and they cut back on driving. And now we've cut back on about a million barrels a day from last year to now. And there's no question, price kills demand. And that's really what's happened.
Doesn't
have anything to do with what the president said or what I said.
Well, it's got people talking. Were you surprised at the reception on Capitol Hill when you got some of the same people who probably hated your guts because of going to support organizations like the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth back against Kerry in 2004? And now some of them seem to be warming to what you're talking about because, frankly, I think you got more solutions than some of them have had.
Well, I'm honestly, and I say this in a humble way, I am the only one with a plan. Nobody else has ever had a plan. And to get off of foreign oil, they come up with all kinds of ideas, but none of them are going to do much for you. But if I switch natural gas over to transportation fuel, then now we're doing some good because in California is so far ahead of the rest of the country as far as air quality and consequently, they've gone to natural gas, in California. A lot of your fleets have. The Port of Los Angeles, the Port of Long Beach, the trash trucks.
Yeah.
LAMTA is the second largest group of buses that are on natural gas. But you know where the first, Mark, where the biggest congregation of buses in the world is that's on natural gas?
Where's that?
Beijing.
Well, they sure need something over there because, in fact, I'm heading back over there in November, and I'm looking what the Olympic athletes are playing. They have some other issues there, too, but at least they're starting with the natural gas.
That's right. But know this, they don't have enough natural gas. So they have to import LNG into the country. We don't. We have plenty of natural gas to fuel transportation and also for power generation.
Now, here's the whole thing. You get together with the wind power and solar power. I'm talking with Boone Pickens, who's just tuning in here on San Diego 1700, and a pretty darn good connection considering you're somewhere flying over the country right now. So I appreciate you squeezing us in on what is probably not a conventional phone call here. But you got these wind turbines. General Electric, I would assume, sent you a lot of thank you notes because your first order was 667 of these 1.5-megawatt turbines. More to come. Those will start going online, a couple of years here. How much happens beyond that, and how much can you get done using wind we already have, which no foreign government controls?
Well, we're gonna do 4,000 megawatts on wind, which is equivalent to two nuclear plants. So, this is a lot of power, but that's going to happen if the government goes ahead and extends the production tax credit, which I think they will. Both Democrats and Republicans know that. That's a good thing for the country, and they're going to extend it, and there'll be more and more happen when they extend the tax credit, they'll do that. I think they'll get it done before the first of the year. That'll be good, but that's peanuts. That'll cost the country about $15 billion a year for the PTC, and we're again importing $700 billion worth of crude oil.
So when people say, well, Pickens is after this production tax credit, it's just all to make billions more, how do you answer that?
Well, look, I'm worth $4 billion. And I'm 80 years old, and you and I both know that I've got three green fees at Del Mar Country Club.
Yeah, you seem to have an in with the Del Mar Country Club. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm in over there.
Because you're married to the woman who owns the place. Nice. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's sleeping with the country club boss.
But I'm not in this. You know, if I'm going to spend $10 billion on a wind farm, yes, I expect to make money. I mean, that'd be foolish.
You're not going to do it just for fun.
No, but I think that shows leadership. I consider myself to be a pioneer because that's the largest wind farm in the world. And when I do it and they see that it is a profitable business, it does lower electric costs for the users. I mean, they're going to, you know, what's going to happen in the deal? People are going to do it, and you're going to have been a leader in doing that, and that's good. I like to have that role, but it's this is all going to work if everybody works together.
And if the country gets on almost a moon landing goal footing, or like Eisenhower when he created the interstate highway system and was a proponent of that back in the 50s. As you know, Boone, when you talk about what you're out there doing, you really don't have to do this. I mean, you got the money. It's certainly a labor of love and certainly economics as well, but it's going to take re-gridding the nation in order to tap in what you're talking about generating, right?
Oh, yeah. But, Mark, you can move the what the government has to do, and you have it right, I think, Eisenhower Interstate Highway, they need to open up so that industry can build the grid or the government build the grid. But this is the opportunity for us to really remake our energy situation so it's, state-of-the-art. Now, the way we look, it's a kind of a jerry-built deal that we've added on to over all the, 50 or 100 years, and it needs to be, upgraded, tied in, and be a national grid. That's one thing. But the government needs to open those corridors so you can transport that from the wind corridor, which will be from Texas to from Texas to Canada. But that'll happen. I saw enough in Washington this week. Mm-hmm. I met with a Democrat caucus in the House. I met with the Republican Senate caucus for lunch yesterday, and all I see from both sides of the aisle is they want to get this fixed, and they don't see it as a partisan issue, and I don't either. See, I see it like war.
Mm-hmm.
You drop politics when the war comes. Well, this is a war because importing 70% of your oil, you have a serious security issue. And I testified for Homeland Security Committee on Tuesday of this week, and I only saw there constructive questioning on my part as to how we could get ourselves comfortable on energy.
So it really transcends politics, and at the same time, we can't assume that just because of what is now, whether it's what's with Iraq and where Afghanistan is, making some progress there, but those aren't the only places where we're going to have conflicts. That whole region is certainly volatile, to say the least. Who knows where things go politically there? So that's why the Pickens Plan, I think, makes sense on a lot of levels and is appealing to both sides. And by the way, when you're listening, you can go over to PickensPlan.com for all the details on this. Politically speaking, because you've been a big Republican supporter for a long time, are you kind of staying out of that this time around? I mean, is this your big focus? Because I got to tell you, your commercials you're doing for the Pickens Plan are a whole lot more moving than some of the political ads out there.
Yeah, I'm out of politics this election. No, if I'm going to be totally nonpartisan, I have to be out and be available to both parties to tell my story because it's a nonpartisan story. So I am available. They know I am. The Democrats are not afraid of me. They don't think I've got some trick up my sleeve or anything like that. And I do have credibility when I tell somebody I'm going to do something. They believe me.
That's for sure. Have you been approached by Obama or McCain's people so far to just take this to the next level?
We've heard some of their people. But what I've invited both candidates to do is to sit down with me and let me show them how I think that we can beat this thing. And if they think enough of what I'm talking about, well, I'll be of help to them. I almost see myself sitting down in front of the commander in chief, whichever one it's going to be, and that I'm a general reporting to them on a war situation. And I'm going to explain to them, you know, what it looks like. I've analyzed it, and I'm going to tell them how we're going to win. And I've analyzed that, too. And they're going to sit there at the table and say, well, okay, let me tell you what, General, what do you think about this, and what do you think about that, how's this going to work, and how quick can it happen? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm quite willing to do just exactly that. Because, you know, first, you know, you say I'm an oil man, I'm in the wind business, you know, and I'm in the gas business.
I'm kind of in the wind business, too, when we're here just by talking.
Yeah, but Mark, I'm an American first.
Gotcha.
And I think people know that. And I want to solve this problem. I'm deeply concerned about it. I'm 80 years old. It's going to be my last chance, probably, to have some influence on what happens.
Talking with Boone Pickens here on San Diego 1700. Now, you may be sitting on the sidelines politically, so you can make this a bipartisan issue, which you should be, but you're not going to step back from the humanitarian efforts you're doing. I mean, you gave that load of money, which had to make their day at Oklahoma State, your alma mater. And we were talking about that at that event at your home back in April, when I mentioned in our introductory remarks that you gave $165 million and went right back to your company, BP Capital. You said that's worth how much now? They've invested, it's up to over $300 million?
Yeah, it's $380 million.
Holy cow. I guess you do know what you're doing. These people are right. You know, it all started. The amazing thing is, and in your bio, we talked about this a little bit at that last event as well. Tell us a little bit about when you had the paper round, because I think that for people who say, well, I can't connect with this. I mean, he's a good Oklahoma guy, but by golly, he's led a charmed life. God's given him this brilliance, but everybody's had paper routes along the line. What happened when you had one as a kid? Tell that story.
About what my grandmother did?
Well, about how you started appropriating the other routes. I mean, you basically worked on mergers early on.
There are two stories.
Yeah, well,
I'll tell you the one. Yeah, I started out with 28 papers, and I grew that route by acquisition. As a route would come open next to me, I would talk the manager at the newspaper, Holdenville Daily News. I would talk him into letting me connected to my initial 28 papers.
Yep.
And I added on both sides of that route up to 156 papers. I had the largest route in town when I was a paper boy 3 years. So it was, I was a fat cat with 156 papers, I can tell you that. I made a lot of money.
So that gave you some skills that you certainly parlayed over the years. Now tell the story about your grandmother.
Well, my grandmother, I came in one day from paper out, and I told him that I had found this billfold in the grass on the route, and I looked to see who owned it, and it was Mr. White, who lived 2-3 doors down the street. And so I went to him, knocked on the door, and he said, oh my gosh, thank you so much. He said, here, he said, I want to reward you for doing this. And he gave me whatever my papers get home, tell my grandmother and my aunt, who were sitting on the screen at court, they said, I came up about, it was about 105 degrees in Holdenville, high humidity. Sit out there and fan themselves and stay cool. And I came in and told them, and none of them, congratulated me or anything else.
Right.
When I got to tell my story, my grandmother said, take the dollar back to him. I said, oh no. I said, why am I taking it back? And she said, we're not going to be paid to be honest. And so she said, you just hurry back over there. So I played my case for about 15 or 20 minutes, and I could see I was a dead duck. I was going to take it back. So I did, knocked on the door. He said, I wanted you to have it. And I said, no. I said, they said, bring it back. We weren't going to get paid to be honest. So I handed it to him, and he got on my bike. And in the meantime, this thunderstorm had come in, and it was just pouring down rain. And I had to cross Burgess Street, which was about 3 feet deep, and I was about 4.5 feet tall, so I pushed my bike across Burgess Street, and when I got home, I wanted to be drowned because I wanted sympathy, so I came in. I looked like a drowned rat, and I said, I almost drowned across Burgess Street, and my aunt said, Sonny, said, if you had gone when we told you to, you'd been back before it rained.
There you have it. Yes, he says Lincoln-esque kind of stuff, which I assume Will that be somewhere in your book that's coming out here in a few weeks? I love the title, The First Billion is the Hardest, Reflections on a Life of Comebacks and America's Energy Future. I know the Pickens plan will be there, but are you going to get autobiographical as well in that?
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of my stories that I love to tell that are in there, but it's a very serious book. It's chapters 8 and 13 are the energy situation, but I get deep into that, so... But, you know, I have had a wonderful life, and the best part of it has been just the last few years.
Yep.
Since I was 70 years old, last 10 years. So
that is amazing. You think about Ben Franklin and people through our history who really got going later in life. It's not that you were a slouch before you were 70, but the last 10 years have been meteoric in so many ways, and you're not sitting back saying, I'm just going to go golf and that's it, although you love golf. What at the end of a day, and a typical day with all the things you're doing, Boone Pickens, What really, from a personal standpoint, what gives you one of those sit down on the couch, man, this is a good day? What floats your boat at the end of the day?
Oh, I don't know like right now, you know, I'm obvious I'm up because this activity, because I don't find anybody that isn't for what I'm talking about. And so that pumps you when you're like that. When you have a good market, you know, when you give some money away and you know it's a good investment. You know, in kids or schools or something else, that's a good day. But I have so many of those. You know, after I've paid 90% of all the taxes I've paid after I was 70 years old.
Really?
And I wasn't a dog taxpayer, before I was 70. I paid pretty good taxes, but from 70 to 80, I paid 90% of my taxes.
Holy cow. Imagine if Reagan hadn't had the tax cut back in the 80s, how that would have looked.
I don't know, but you know, I think maybe I can beat the 70s the 10 years, 80 to 90. I hope so.
Well, I'll tell you what, I could talk to you all day, but you got things to do, and I appreciate so much you calling from the airplane today. T. Boone Pickens with us, spends a lot of time here in San Diego and gives to so many different humanitarian organizations. I've often said if it's something good and worth doing, chances are you're in the middle of it, and right now taking this huge new role, which, again, you didn't have to do. You stepped up to do the Pickens plan, and you got both Republicans and Democrats and people who aren't sure in between saying, hey, this is a plan. We haven't seen anything this specific. Again, you can read about it at PickensPlan.com. I want to get you back on when we get closer when the book is out here, because there are numerous stories to go into. And, hey, you're local, so looking forward to seeing you and talking to you again soon.
Mark, thanks. You know, we started talking just west of Albuquerque. I'm almost in Sholo, Arizona. I'm on the way home.
Well, you say hello to your lovely wife, Madeline, and thanks so much. We'll see you soon.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Take care. Boone Pickens. T. Boone Pickens. On Air Boone, or whatever they're calling it there. It's not a bad connection. There. A couple of times I thought, oh, we're losing it, but it was going for the different relay stations. And, his new book is coming out. The First Billion is the Hardest is the name of that. That is staggering when you think about, he said, what did he say, 90% of the taxes he's paid in his whole life, he's paid from age 70 to 80, and he just turned 80 in May. PickensPlan.com is where you check that out. More coming up. San Diego 1700.